I'm Abby Kinney, and you are listening to Upzoned. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to another episode of Upzoned, a show where we explore one big story in the news each week that touches the Strong Towns conversation, and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. I'm Abby Kinney, an urban planner with Gould Evans, and I'm joined by Kemet Coleman, a Kansas City music artist and producer, entrepreneur, community activist, urbanist, who happens to be the person behind Upzone's theme music. Kemet, I'm so glad to have you on today. Thanks so much for joining me. It's always great to bring on another Kansas Cityan to this show.
Oh God, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So the article that we will be discussing today was published in Smart Cities Dive by Katrina Johnston Zimmerman, entitled "Recent Protests in Public Space. It's All About Equity." In this article, the author highlights the incredibly important role of public space in our society, especially as they relate to protests. Listeners everywhere are likely well aware of the recent demonstrations taking place not only in cities across the United States, but really all across the world over racial inequities experienced in the Black community following the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. This has prompted many conversations about the role of our public spaces and how they provide a platform to protest systems of injustice. Demonstrations not only have taken place in parks, but also within the streets of our cities, often intended to create peaceful disruption of everyday life in order to elevate the collective voice of the people. So something that has been kind of beautiful to me is seeing protesters chanting, "These streets are our streets." As a planner, generally frustrated with kind of the inhumane design of our streets, that chant is kind of music to my ears. I think that the ownership over our public realm is so often overlooked and taken for granted. And I think this is the time to really reorient our understanding of public space for what it is, public. So, Kemet, I'm curious about how this article and topic has struck you and your perception about public use of the public realm that we see today.
Absolutely. I really think it's interesting that we're talking about public space and it's kind of sexy now. And the reason why it's sexy is the fact that we're talking about it and, you know, and the public themselves are also finding that they're also important. For a long time, it's been like pulling teeth to get people to care about sidewalks and green space and parks. I really think the article did a good job of showcasing, you know, what public space can mean to a community, because a lot of people don't necessarily, at least the public don't necessarily, view the public space as an asset that they can utilize at any point for any point. And really, I think public space is at the crux of democracy. Without it, we couldn't necessarily gather. I mean, I can't see people gathering on a freeway safely, at least. But, you know, in a more urban environment that's more walkable, it's definitely a place that people can have their voices be heard.
Yeah, I think that is a really good point. And it's something that I've seen kind of in the urban design, urbanist community, where people have been really excited recently over the concept of open streets, which is to accommodate the needs of businesses to reopen while undermining driving space so that people are able to participate in regular activity and commerce while social distancing. This movement has really been a gradual push towards reminding us that the public realm is in fact ours and therefore must be flexible in its use. The open streets movement has been kind of a reflection of many people's desire to return to normalcy from COVID-19. I think these demonstrations kind of add another layer to that in reminding us that public space is also a platform for reflecting all aspects of our culture, including those that may be uncomfortable and unrelated to the desire to get back to normal. It is actually just the opposite, and that's to disrupt normalcy by drawing attention to often ignored issues.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of the open streets movement, as well as someone that uses several different modes of transportation, from walking, biking, public transit as well. I just think really having that connectivity is important, and especially seeing other people engaging in that is great. The mayor of Kansas City grew up homeless and, you know, took public transit to wherever he needed to go as a child. And so, you know, seeing him also be on board with something like that is great. Having the leadership in our cities and our public officials that hold office is really, you know, something that I think should be applauded. And I just think Open Streets Movement really embodies a lot of these things that we miss, you know, when we're cooped up in our houses, but have been here all along. And the fact that we can gather is great.
Yeah, I think that is a really great point. And I've been really impressed by the mayor of Kansas City's leadership, particularly in the past couple of days. I think that his leadership is something that is really needed right now. And it's great just to see that he's been, you know, taking a stand and helping and supporting the people in this city, who are upset for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think what's important about that is it doesn't just become one person that's the cheerleader. When the person at the top of whatever municipality is really encouraging these things, then it inspires other people to, you know, get out of their comfort zone. If they were in one, and, you know, inspires those who have been jaded over the years by saying, you know, I feel like we've been talking about this for a long time now.
right.
You know, to finally get some validation and to see this in action. Most recently, I posted a picture of my new bike on Instagram, and the caption that I put on there was rolling down Paseo. Paseo is a popular thoroughfare here in Kansas City. And, you know, I had several people comment, bike lane. And it was really cool to see that.
Yeah. And that's another thing is like just rethinking how we occupy and design public space for, you know, more democratic uses. And sometimes that simply means putting a bike lane on a street and making it safer for more people to use it.
Exactly. I mean, when you put the bike lane on, it's not just safer for the cyclist, but it's also safer for the pedestrian that's on the sidewalk.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the author also talks about the fundamental role public spaces play in exposing us to people who are different from us in ways that are enriching for the culture of our communities and ultimately make us better human beings. There's a question about who is empowered to feel entitled to public space in our cities. According to our Constitution, all people are free to occupy public space, but I wonder if everyone actually feels welcome in all public spaces and how your perception of safety and acceptance changes depending on where you are, who you are, and how others might perceive you.
You know, there was a study, I'm not sure where it was conducted, but I read a study that shown that parents that take their children to parks haven't really thought about the park being also for them. They just see the park as something that they can, you know, bring their children to. But I really think that once we start to, you know, kind of reverse that thinking and you know, allow people to understand that it's also for you, then we can start having more productive conversations about what we do with this public space and, you know, and whether that's for everything from, you know, working out to healthy lifestyles or to protests like we're seeing today in the wake of George Floyd.
Yeah. So a few years ago, Strong Towns put out this list of strength tests, kind of asking questions about your community and whether or not, you know, it points towards you having a strong town, which I thought was kind of fascinating because question number two asked, if the revolution came to your town, would people know where to go? It's really interesting to me to look at where the natural public gathering spaces are in various communities and which communities really don't have a natural community-wide gathering space at all. From a planning perspective, that is something that I think is really critical as an element to our culture. And in Kansas City, it's actually kind of interesting to me that the focal point of protest happens to be directly across from the Country Club Plaza, which has a pervasive history related to discrimination. I'm curious if that's something that you've thought about at all or if you've seen that irony.
Yeah, I've definitely thought about and have witnessed the irony that you're talking about. And I really think that the plaza area founded by, you know, or developed by J.C. Nichols has been a point of tacit protest in itself, in its mere existence. And so I think that's the natural place for people to go protest and make their voices heard, because I think it's pretty understood that either the plaza is one of the greatest points of our city, or it's for some a place of darkness and exclusion. And so, yeah, I think, you know, when it comes down to public spaces and, you know, really what it means for community, naturally, I think people gravitate towards these areas where they might have, or when they usually drive through and have an inner protest with themselves.
That's a really good point. And it's interesting to me that there are communities that kind of lack a distinctive place to protest in the first place, especially in kind of the newer suburban or unwalkable communities where public spaces designed primarily to accommodate vehicle movement. This, in a sense, kind of shifts our perception and demonstration of freedom in public space towards autonomy rather than community cohesion. Strong Towns wrote once, I think in the same point, that the character of your public space indicates your community's level of cohesion and communication. If you can't envision your neighbors gathering together in a central location, it's hard to envision coming together to solve day-to-day problems and build strong towns. I think that's really important. And it's important that we all have a space to express ourselves in these ways, especially when people are feeling immense amounts of pain in our community.
Absolutely. Yeah. Such an important part of any community is that. And, you know, I really just think we, our country, our society, whatever, has done a disservice to our communities and, you know, or lack thereof, because of the way that they have been designed for this, like you say, autonomous, more operational style, you know, type of way. Instead of encouraging people to gather, it's basically encouraging people to move quickly. We know that progress doesn't necessarily move quickly, especially if you can't unite and be together. And I think that's one of the things that the younger generation is no longer accepting. They're no longer accepting these environments that are devoid of community there, and by default devoid of spaces where people can gather and walk and be human. I mean, we're not human. When we're in our vehicles, we are at competition. We are at odds, and you punish your neighbor by honking at them. And so I think people are tired of that. And so, yeah, I really think that it's really, really great to see so many people in the streets right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, so we talked a little bit offline about how the police kind of move forward from something like this and different ways of policing a community or having some sort of order after this. Are you interested in sharing some of your ideas?
Yeah, I would love to see more police on foot, really engaging with the community members on a personal level. Like I said earlier, I feel like when you are in a vehicle, you are at odds and with competition with the next vehicle operator. It's a very sociopathic way of being transported, if you will. And so I think that also applies to policing and the fact that, you know, the majority of the police you see are usually in a vehicle perusing the streets instead of engaging with community members is one of the main problems. I think that communities that have been disenfranchised and underrepresented have with the police force themselves. So what I would like to see is them getting out of their vehicles, being on bikes more, walking. I would also encourage police forces to have a requirement that the police that serve the communities actually be residents of those particular communities. That way they can use some of the other services the community might benefit from. You know, when they're off duty, you know, you can see your local cop at you know, the corner store, if you will, or at the grocery store, and really just, you know, have a chance to say hello to an officer without, you know, without having to provide proof that you are legitimate.
I think it's kind of scary when you think about the fact that you don't know any police officers in your community. I mean, I don't know that I could name anybody or know anybody on a first name basis. So that's a really important aspect. And there's also a level of, like, I guess I would say, like, community or cultural pressure if you live in the neighborhood to be fair with how you may be interacting in any profession where you're impacting a community. There's a lot to be said about being present and being there and people kind of knowing each other that way. But something that has kind of occurred to me recently is what it means for the United States to be a strong country. You see people using indicators like GDP, unemployment, the stock market, other statistics to measure how we're doing. But I think that having a strong town really means that we start looking at the neighborhood level. I think we need to ask ourselves first whether we have strong neighborhoods that make up our community, and in turn, strong communities that make up a city, strong cities that make up a region, all the way up to the national level. If we don't have strong neighborhoods, then we don't have a strong country. And it's really time for us to start reflecting on neighborhoods, I think, and getting more engaged in local government and empowering local voices to be a part of that.
I agree. I think, you know, we really need to get back to the idea that our neighborhoods are literally the DNA of the strength of this country. We've been so focused on high growth, you know, the biggest projects, the best projects. In my opinion, the best projects are an interconnectedness of hundreds of projects. Those ties at a micro level, you know, when we think about neighborhoods themselves, are very interesting. And, you know, when you travel to different cities, you know, I'm not necessarily looking for the coolest skyscraper. I'm not necessarily looking for things like that. I'm looking for the coolest neighborhood where I can just post up and, you know, people watch, I can shop, I can grab a bite. This is me, I guess, pre-COVID-19, but
yeah, exactly.
But, you know, at the same time, I do think there's so much that we can do to really strengthen our neighborhoods and for our cities and municipalities to really focus on small business and, you know, enhancing services that communities already provide. I think a lot of the times the focus is on what a community might need. And a lot of times the communities already have a lot of things. They just need amplification. They need to be put into the forefront and taken seriously. A lot of people are not as verbose and articulate in speaking what they might need. You know, for instance, if I go to a school and, you know, we're talking about urbanism, I'm going to have to break that down. You know, I can't just say, you know, urbanism is the, you know, in relationship between humankind and the built environment. We have to really enhance our vocabulary with the common person to really make a lot of these moves, because, you know, they're going to be the ones that attend the meetings at City Hall and make the changes that we really need. And we need that support.
Yeah, I think that is a beautiful vision for the world, is, you know, looking at our neighborhoods and helping to support and articulate the needs. I think that's a great point. I think this is a good beat to end the episode on. But before we conclude, it is time for the Down Zone, which is the part of this show where we can share anything that we've been reading or listening to, watching, or just interesting things happening in our lives. So, Kimmin, I'm curious, what's been on your radar this week?
You know, what's been on my radar is a lot of the George Floyd stuff. And, you know, and really, I'm just very inspired at all of the people that are coming out in support of equity and just fairness in general. And, you know, really seeing that broken down in so many different ways, everything from, you know, people reaching out directly to people of color and, you know, all the diversity in the protests, and just seeing people not necessarily enjoying, but utilizing streets for their original purpose, which is to bring people together and to be these meeting points. I really think that everyone is being great urbanists right now. and sharing and showcasing our democracy. So I've been watching a lot of that. You know, I've also been listening to a lot of music and making a lot of music. I, as you know, you said, Abby, earlier, I'm a musician, for those who don't know. And, you know, I've released 3 different albums since COVID-19 happened. And really, it has, all of this is, you know, redefined who I am as a musician. And that's been pretty fun to see. But, you know, on top of that, I've just been watching my kids and, you know, been cooking a lot at home and you know, just been enjoying the good weather that we've been blessed with as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the past several months have kind of given a lot of people, it's been a really rough year, I would say, but it's given a lot of people time for like self-reflection, which is a good thing. You know, my down zone actually is related to public space and self-reflection, as I've been kind of dedicating my time more this week to the simple act of sitting in the park. I go on walks every single day with my dog, and we pass through several neighborhood parks on our route. And we often don't spend a lot of time just lingering. I just walk, go on the regular walk. You know, it's the constant waterfall of media over these past couple of months with everything that has been going on can be pretty overwhelming. And I've found that the act of just sitting in the park and observing my surroundings and talking to strangers has been kind of therapeutic and uplifting. It's a good reminder now to connect with your neighbors and your surroundings and kind of get in touch with the neighborhood that you spend so much time in. I just think that's a really good theme of today and today's time.
Yeah, I agree. I've been getting to know my neighbors a lot more too, you know, more so than in the past when it was so go, go, go. Now it's, I think all of this has forced us to really slow down.
Yeah, it can be a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. So thanks so much for talking with me today, Kemet. Before we sign off, where can people find your work?
You can find me at KemetColeman.com. That's K-E-M-E-T. Coleman.com. Otherwise, you can find my music everywhere from SoundCloud to Spotify to Apple Music and all of that. Just Google me. I've got a lot of little projects here and there.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Upzoned. Keep doing what you can to build a strong town. Thanks, Kemet.
Thank you for having me.